It's July 2nd at the home of Rabbi Yitzchak and Sharona Rubin. Okay, we have introduction. It's going to be a continuation, but you don't have to be at part one. We've been doing the psukim, just trying to convey a certain methodology, a certain derech of how to read the psukim and spot the questions, ask, you know, the pertinent questions that are of interest to you, to me, and see if we could work out some answers on the basis of the information that the Torah itself provides. So we were taking up the early life of Moshe Rabbeinu, and we dealt with this on, it's recorded, I'm not going to do it again, with the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu, as soon as he grows up a bit, say he's a teenager or whatever, and he goes out, and he's cognizant of the fact that the Jews are his brothers, and he's concerned about the enslavement, and he intervenes to help them. So the question was, where did he develop this from? Where did he get this knowledge that the Jews were his own people? Or even if he did know that as a fact, because the daughter of Pharaoh raised him, said that he came from the... But where did he develop such a tremendous attachment? So that was the mystery, so to speak. And we tried to work it out on the basis of what was found in the Psukim. We did that last time. That's why I tape it. So in case anyone's interested, you know, you could listen to the class. We're going to continue from there. And because the Torah doesn't provide us with much information, biographical information. In general, it doesn't provide us. It's not really a biography. But a certain amount of information, you want to have some concept of who Moshe was and what did he do that warranted that Hashem would choose him to be the leader of the Jewish people. So let's pick it up in chapter Beis. I don't know, everybody has their own chumash here, so it's, I can't give you a page. Chapter Beis, chapter 2. We'll start from Yud Aleph. We'll start from 11. That would be chapter 2, verse 11. I think everybody's pretty much familiar with the text, with the story. Should I pause? So it says, "Vayhi b'yom ahem," it was in those days. "Vayigdal Moshe," Moshe grew up. It's not clear. That's Pasuk Yud Aleph. It's not clear how old he was. I don't think it's all that important. Assuming around a teenager, give or take. "Vayetze alechav," and he went out to his brother. So the Torah is depicting the Jews as his brothers. That means that he was cognizant of the fact that they're not just ordinary people, that he has a certain commitment to them. And it says he saw them in their labors. "Vayarish mitzri maka ish ivri me'achav," and he saw an Egyptian man hitting, beating a ish ivri, a Jewish man, me'achav, from his brothers. I pointed out last time that it's redundant. We already know that they're from his brothers. Why does it have to tell us again that the ish ivri was from his brothers? Just briefly, I tried to explain it in the fact that there's two different, the Torah is depicting two different levels of brotherhood over here. Initially, he was concerned about them. They were important. So that's one level of commitment. There are people that are concerned about what's happening to the Jews, what this incident, that incident. So that's their brothers. So they're concerned enough to go out and take a look. And maybe we'll make a report. We'll make a protest. That's one level. But what if it requires something more than that? What if the situation is such where you actually have to intervene and put your life at risk? Is he still your brother? That's why the Torah mentions it again. That's a different level of brotherhood, of identification. And it had to tell us that. Not only was he committed to them in terms of trying to survey the situation, see what's going on, what the causes are, try and understand it. The first thing he wanted to do was to understand it. How did it come about, and what's the reason for it? And then this situation developed where a Jew's life was in danger, and he had to make a very, very big decision, and he chose, they were his brothers. Okay, that's basically where we left off. So we want to continue. So what did he do? So the pasuk says, "Vayifen kovacho." He looked all around. "Vayar kienish," and he saw that there was no man. "Vayachas amitzri," and he smote the Mitzri, "Vayitmineu b'chol," and he buried him in the sand. So it would appear, I mean, there's Midrashim, there's, you know, Rashi, there's Midrashim, that's for a midrash is a further enhancement that it really has to be rooted in the text itself. But basically, I mean, Rashi makes the point, Vayar ki ein ish, he saw that there was no man. So, right? Now, I just want to caution everybody, when you learn a Rashi and he quotes a midrash, don't confuse the midrash with the actual pshat. I mean, a lot of people do that. They forget, they negate the pshat itself, and the midrash becomes the reality. The midrash is not, the Rashi always tells us, this is a midrash, and nevertheless, the pasuk doesn't go away from its basic pshat. You have to learn the pshat. Okay, but these are very interesting midrashim. For example, it says, and he saw that there was no man. So Rashi says he saw in the future, with Nevuah, that there was no significant individual destined to come from the Egyptian. And that's not the plain pshat. That's not the plain pshat. But what's Rashi trying to tell us? I mean, okay, so what? Why is that so important? What do I care? And what would have happened if there would have been somebody significant? That's an interesting question in its own right. Because according to Jewish law, if a person, it's very, very rare that the Sanhedrin ever gave the death penalty. You know, we do have capital punishment for a number of sins, but it's structured in such a way. I mean, that it's a defense lawyer's dream. I mean, it's if you can't defend a Jew in the Sanhedrin from the death penalty, then you're pretty bad. Because the laws were designed in a way where it's virtually impossible to actually. That's why you see this statements, a court that kills somebody once in 7 years. One says once in 70 years. I think it's Rabbi Akiva said that if I was on the Sanhedrin, they'd never do any executions. So the death penalty is there, but it wasn't designed to be the deterrent. It's designed for a different purpose. But I don't think that this would matter, that if a person was found guilty, was found to be guilty and deserved the death penalty, capital punishment, they would execute him. They didn't have like in America where it goes years and years of appeals. They would execute him pretty much immediately. If somebody, let's assume a Navi were to come and to say, one second, I could see in the future that he's destined to have a Gadol Hador, or Mashiach is going to come from him. So would that change everything?
No.
No? Because the Beis Din has an obligation. I mean, the Rambam points out that not only is this person liable to the, but it's a mitzvah. If someone is found guilty, that it's a mitzvah upon the Beis Din to execute him. These things wouldn't come into consideration. We do have the phenomenon of what we call Dinei Shamayim, that there are certain crimes where it's given over to the heavenly court. In the heavenly court, it's a different story. I'm sorry, your question?
Yeah, it's in effect, even though it's a midrash, is it in effect the first mention of Moshe's ability that he has Nevuah?
That's a good point. That's a very good point. It's telling, and then that's an excellent point. Because, see, that's the way you really should learn. Like, what do I deduce from this? I deduce from this that the Torah is telling us that even at this stage of the game, when he's rather young, and he does have Nevuah, it's making that point. But I don't think it's doing so for the sake of telling us. I think that we can deduce it from that. But see, I take it like this, that the question really is, when Moshe saw this, and he was, one way to understand it is that he was infuriated.
Right.
And that's the way we respond. We respond, you know, if you see somebody, an innocent person, and that person is being beaten or taken advantage. Mm. Yes?
I have a question that worries me here.
Good.
If Moshe was a prince of the court in the sea here,
yeah,
and this man is there and he's beating up Egyptians, he's obviously a worker, a low-level Egyptian worker, why did he have to kill him? Why couldn't he go up to him and say, stop what you're doing, as an order to him? Because then he's showing that he would kill in a state of anger, which happens to me as an example of this.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, we don't know the actual facts. It would appear, I mean, there's Rashi's on this, there was a relationship between, the Egyptian was after this guy because he was interested in his wife, according to Rashi.
Oh, well, that's Midrash.
That's the Midrash. Okay, even if you don't have to accept I agree, you do not have to accept every Midrash. The Torah does not always communicate all the details, but we have to conclude that there was a real necessity to intervene. Now, lo samen al dam reyecha, you're not allowed to stand idly by. So sometimes you may have the opportunity to call a cop and stop and so on and so forth. But I think the situation was such where it demanded that he do something, that he was not in a position to stop him in any other way. Because if he was, you're right, if he was in a position to stop him in a different way, then why would he do this and why would he subject himself to that risk? The thing I would say is like this, though, that your point is well taken, because I think that's the purpose of the Midrash, that he did not simply act out of an emotional anger and a hatred. Like, that's blind. That's not the true greatness. You have people like that they can't stand to see certain things happening, and then they're driven by an emotion. If he's just driven by an emotion, well, maybe it's okay, but that's not the true greatness of a person. By telling us that he looked into the matter, that means he contemplated. He engaged in a certain amount of contemplation, and he reached a conclusion that this is what has to be done. He acted with his chachma. He acted with his intelligence.
You're getting that from the Yar Ki Ein Ish.
Exactly. Because, what do you mean? Yar Ki Ein Ish. Who cares? Why? If Moshe acted purely out of emotion and revenge, then he wouldn't be concerned about anything in the future. Yar Ki Ein Ish is telling us that he was thinking about all the parameters, all of the consequences that it would entail, and he made a decision.
How much time did he have to do all this?
That's a good question. We don't know, but I assume he had enough time to think that he didn't act instinctively.
I mean, that's a point of view.
See, there was enough time. There was enough time for that. How much time, if we were to make a movie about this, I don't know. It's hard to fit in the details, but I think you are right to conclude that it wasn't like instantaneously. Like he just got. In other words, if we think that Moshe was outraged and just hit the guy without any thought, then that's not Moshe Rabbeinu. Yes.
The risen Midrash
say.
Yeah.
Would go home and say, guess what happened to me today? I was being beaten up, and the prince or whatever they call Moshe came and said. So he wasn't snitching. He was telling good. But it got around the whole community.
Yeah, you just preempted. I was going to ask that question. Hold on, just a minute. Wait. Now, the question is, how did they know? How did they know? Because it said, Vayifin Kovacho. He looked all around, and we assume he had good eyesight, and it doesn't mention that the Torah is not telling you that there was anybody there. So all things being equal, Moshe seems should have gotten away with it. And how did Dasan and Aviram know? But I think you've... Beautiful, very, very, very. See, that's using your own intelligence. There's no peerish that has to tell you this. You have a right to use your own intelligence. So, Revitin.
Marion, my name's
Marion. Marion, so saying that there was only two people that knew about it.
Moshe and the
one he saved.
And the victim.
Yeah, and the victim. Now, Moshe obviously didn't go and tell anybody. And I'm sure he told this guy, or he didn't even have to tell him, keep your mouth closed. And this person would have no reason. He would have no reason to go and tell anybody because he's going to get in trouble too. If this should become known, they're going to come after him too. Because you were there, and why'd you allow this to happen? So he's in just as much trouble. So if that's the case, the question is, who would tell? And why would that person tell?
He told his wife.
Well, no, there's a lesson. Marion said a very good point. There's a very important lesson over here, though. There's a very, very important lesson that we can all learn. Because this individual had no intention to harm Moshe, to snitch on him. And he had no intention to get himself in trouble. But he couldn't keep his big mouth shut. He couldn't. Because man, by nature, cannot keep a secret. Cannot keep a secret. When something happens to you that's big, okay, this you let's say I don't know, you won some great thing, but they're telling you keep it quiet. Or something great, how you got this tremendous promotion. You've got to share it with someone. If you can't share it, you're going to go crazy. I mean, it's not worth anything. The truth of the matter is, many great things in life are just not worth anything. You have to have someone to share it with. So what do you do? But on the other hand, it's dangerous stuff. This was a miracle. Look, you're not going to believe what happened to me. He had to tell somebody. So he didn't tell Dustin and Aviram. I don't believe he told Dustin and Aviram. Okay? Because he probably had a sense that these guys weren't going to be too happy with Moshe. So how did it get to Dustin and Aviram? That's the question. He had to tell somebody. But he didn't go around making an announcement in shul. Right? Or he's going to give a kiddush because in honor of Moshe, who saved me from the... He's not going to do that. So what did he do? He found one person. Each person has one person. And I'm telling you, I have to tell you something. You're not going to believe it, but you got to promise me you can't tell this to anybody. Okay? You can't tell this to anybody. So you tell him, Yeah, but you understand, now that person is in the same position you were in. They have a piece of information that nobody else has, right? Mm-hmm. And they, oh, so they have one person, and they same thing. I'm going to tell you something, but you can't tell anybody. And before you know it, everybody knows it. Right? Everybody knows it. So, and I've seen this so many times. When people were told not to tell, and then you find people, how? I just told her, and she said she wasn't going to tell. But you know, that's an impossibility. You know, that's an impossibility because people can't keep their mouth shut. They can't. You may know. I mean, I'm not saying there's some people that are real tzaddik, male or female tzaddikis, that you can really trust. Okay, there's, but that's the rare, rare exception. The average individual, Gossip. I've got a piece of information that I got to share. I got to tell because that makes me important. That makes me the center. I know that piece of information that nobody else has. So therefore, don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. You're going to be in pain. You're going to be in pain, but you have to decide. Enjoy the thing for its own sake. Look, maybe your husband, maybe your wife, okay. But even then, you're putting that person in jeopardy. Because now you're giving that person the same conflict. That's what you see from here. That was your insight. That was very, very good. Nobody had any intention, because the victim himself did not have any intention to hurt Moshe. And as I said, he would hurt himself. But it's an impossibility to keep it to yourself. That apparently, I don't know, we can't, whether Moshe overlooked that factor or whatever. I'm sure Moshe told him. And at the time, he would have every reason to believe that this person is going to keep it quiet. But that's a very fascinating thing. Let's continue now to the next adventure of Moshe. This is getting interesting. Isn't it fun? This is fun. So what happens next? Oh, Vayishma Paro is a davar hazeh. How did Paro hear, though? Who told Paro? Rashi says, Dasan Aviram. You see, because what happens is like this. The information is now out. Now all you need is that anger. People get into a fight, and people get into a fight. They go to the authorities. That's the famous story about the Meiser. It's brought down in one of the Sfarim of the Rav by Rabbi Schreiber, who transcribed Shiurim of his. I forget the famous convert. Patak? I can't think of his name. There was a famous convert. And he came from a very, very significant family, wealthy family, and he was drawn to Torah and Judaism. And the family disowned him, and he was in danger. Because at that time, the Christians would execute any Christian that would convert to Judaism. So he was in a Jewish community, and he'd sit in the base medrash and learn all day. He was a real tzaddik. And one day, there's this kid. This kid was annoying and this and that, so he rebuked the kid. So the father of the kid, who the heck is this guy? He's a convict. Yeah, he's gonna. He went and he told the authorities. He went, you know, Moshe, the house of the Moshe. The Rav said, he pointed at the house, he became known as the Moshe. And then there was nothing they told him. The father was a very influential guy, the family. They said, listen, if you give up Judaism, come back, you're fine. You won't be executed. He refused. He refused. There's another part I can't tell. There's another part where the Vilna Gaon visited him right before the execution.
Count Potocki.
Yeah. Okay, it just came to mind. I wasn't. But it's a tragic story. It's a very sad story. But the Jews could behave in a manner like that. We always have to. We shouldn't assume any moral superiority. Just be humble.
One question, Dasan Aviram keeps picking up. There is a reason why Rashi brings up this couple, this duo, picked up always when it comes to as coming to an example, whether it's factual or not. He seems to feel it's very important to mention these guys came and they reported it. And they appear again a couple of times down the road as being, you know, even 40 years later, and they're involved in it.
As we saw in the case of Korach, and what the Ramban says, that their rebellion was the worst of all. It's a prototype.
It's a prototype.
We always have to be on guard.
Right.
There are people like that. Well, we're not going to define exactly what their, the character is. Let's proceed. Let's take up the next story. So Moshe runs away. Okay? By Yavakesh Lahargas Moshe. You see, the fact that he was raised in his home. It didn't mean a thing. He is the Moshiach of the Jews. He's totally opposed, and he's a danger now. He's a danger to the policy of the. Vayivrach Moshe b'nei Paro, and Moshe ran away from Paro. Vayeshev be'eretz Midyan, Vayeshev ala be'er. So he dwelled in the land of Midyan, and he dwelled by the well. Okay. Now there's no need to assume that the story we're going to read next about Moshe's intervention with the daughters of Yisro, it doesn't have to happen immediately. Okay, because Moshe was approximately, I think, about 60 years past till he returns. When he returns, he's 80 years old, and he leaves, assuming between 13 and 20. So he was there for a pretty long time, and he dwelled by the Be'er. I think it means that the Torah is telling us the next significant event that takes place in the life of Moshe. This is a fascinating story. He can't keep out of trouble, Moshe. Yeah, he can't mind his own business.
Injustice.
He can't mind the. He cannot tolerate injustice. Well, the Kohen Midyan Sheva Bonos. So the Kohen of Midyan. It's interesting that we know that this is Yisro. We know that this is Yisro. He had seven daughters, and they would come and they would draw the water, you know, from the wells, and they fill up the. They were shepherds, apparently. The girls, the daughters in those days, I mean, you know, performed those tasks to water the sheep of their father. Vayavo haroam vayagarshim. And the shepherds came and drove them away. In other words, apparently they had done all this work and got the water, and then it was time to water, and then they came and basically stole their water, I assume, drove them away, and they put their sheep in there first. Okay. Vayakam Moshe. By Oshian. And Moshe arose and he saved them. By Yashk Estzonam. And he watered their sheep. Then it says, we'll just read this, the Psukkim, just to finish the story and then we'll analyze it. Vatavon el Ruel Avim. He had a lot of names, okay? And they came to their father, it's really Yisro. By Yomer, he says, Madumi Hartan Bohayom. How come he is so quick? How come he's so, they were back early? Vatomarna, and they said, Ish Mitzri Hitzilono Miyad Aron, an Egyptian man, because apparently Moshe wore the garb of an Egyptian, saved us from the shepherds. Vagam Dolo Dolo Lanu, and he also drew for us, Vayashka Zatzon, and he watered the sheep. Vayomril Benosa Vayo, he says to his daughter, so where is he? He was rebuking them. Why didn't you invite? How do you just abandon this man? Call him and he'll eat bread. Rashi says, as you all know, the euphemism that the lechem is really a euphemism for shaduchim. Like he's giving him a double potch. Yeah, because it says with regard to Yosef that everything was in his control. Except for the bread. But Rashi says, in other words, except for his relationship with his wife. So the term lechem is a euphemism for shaduchim. So he's sort of giving them a little bit of a criticism. What's the matter with you girls? You know, don't you see a
good that possibility?
That's quite a guy. That's a hero. You don't, you know, the primary criticism was, I mean, Karsa Tov, the person does this. This wasn't just a small thing. Yisro recognized the greatness. Because Yisro wanted, then as a result, he had a reason for wanting to make that shidduch. He wanted a close relationship with Moshe. It's true. By all Moshe Hashem is Ish. And Moshe agreed to live with the man by Yitin as Tzipor Bito. LaMoshe, and he gave his daughter Tzipor. And then they had the sons. Clearly, Yisro recognized that there was something special. Well, look at the deed that he did. But I want to ask, let's ask, what are the questions, though? Let's take the pasuk. What are some basic questions? By the way, before we get to the basic questions, you see another element in the greatness of Moshe, that his involvement and his sense of justice and opposition to oppression was not limited just to the Jews. There was a universal aspect about this. That's part of his greatness, because it didn't matter, because all people are created in the image of God. So affliction for people to be afflicted is an evil, it's wrong, and he intervened even if it wasn't Jewish. Okay, that's one element. But tell me what's wrong with this pasuk, or what's strange. Okay, so the girls drew the water, and then the roim came and drove them away. We have no idea why. Who were these roim? What was going on? We don't know why. Whatever. And Moshe arose by Oshion. That's a strong word. And he saved them, like, you know, that term saving is usually reserved when you really save somebody from a tremendous danger. That would have been appropriate to the case of the Egyptian. Vayashkes tzonem, and he watered their sheep. What's wrong with this? Just in that pasuk itself. What doesn't make sense over here?
First of all, if their father...
Yeah, hold on. Hold on a second, Rabbi. Let's give the people a chance.
Read it again and we'll listen carefully.
I'm sorry, what?
Read the pasuk again and
It says, Vayavo haroam vaygarshim. The shepherds came and drove them away.
Sonam.
I'm sorry?
Sonam.
No,
not sonam. It sounds like he
drew them off.
He watered the sheep of the roim.
Oh, no. Okay, but it means the sheep of the girls, because that's what they say to their father later.
Yeah.
Okay, by Yagam Moshe, so let me just read the pasuk. It says that the shepherds came and drove them away. And then Moshe arose and he saved them and he watered the sheep. Meaning their sheep, of the girls, not the roam. I'm not gonna why would you do that? Why would you do that? But what doesn't make sense here in the behavior of Moshe? I'm assuming that Moshe is a rational person. I'm assuming Moshe is acting rationally. We'll soon see. All right, let's assume that he took a pity, that it was an injustice, and he arose. But basically, why did he water their sheep? That's their job.
Somebody had fed the sheep already.
Well, no, they hadn't gotten to watering the sheep yet. They had drawn the way I understand it, they had drawn the water, so now the next thing to do was to get the sheep over and drink, but then they were driven away. So then the shepherds came. And I don't know if they do, how much water they use, whatever, it doesn't matter. But then he had to fight with the shepherds. Now, my question is like this. I understand part one. He wanted to help them. Well, we'll get back to that. So let's assume it made sense to help them. But these girls were quite capable of watering the sheep. That was their job. So, you know, what's the point of Moshe watering the sheep? Why did he do that? That doesn't fit into any category. That I would say is irrational. In other words, I'm going by and I hear somebody screaming, and I run into the house and there's a intruder, and I run in and I save you from the intruder, and I hold the guy.
But this is Moshe Rabbeinu doing the same thing as he did the first time, when he saw an Egyptian beating a Jew.
Moshe wanted to be helpful, but I don't have to, as I said, let me finish with my example. I came in here, I really didn't, but I came in here and I caught the guy and I called the police and they came in and they took him away. This is Friday and you were in the middle of preparing for Shabbos, okay? So my job is finished, right? You don't need me to clean your house for Shabbos, right? So would it make sense for me after I did that? That's enough. Your problem was that you had an intruder. I got rid of him. Now everything should go back to you. Thank me. I leave. You clean your house. I have to clean your house too.
But
that doesn't make any sense.
You're assuming.
That would be irrational.
You're assuming.
Well, that's
okay, gentlemen. But if a woman like the case you gave, and for example, we just studied this recently. This the mitzvah when if you should see the animal, it says of your enemy,
right.
Fallen beneath his load. Okay, so you have an obligation. There's two obligations. One is to remove it from the animal, so the animal doesn't suffer. Then you have to help the guy to get it back on again because he needs help getting it back. And that's it. Goodbye. He goes on his way. I don't have to escort him to the next place. I don't have to go get him a coffee. I just have. This is what I have to do. Now, in the case that you're giving me with the old lady. It's always the old lady. So the old lady. What if it's an old guy? and she drops the thing and all that. So I help. I run in there and I help. Now, I see she may need help. It's going to happen again. So I'll let me help you. Let me help you. Actually, you know, going up from your place, when you're going up where the museum is around, it's really steep.
Yes, the
so there was an old lady,
and
she's pushing up this... I used my whatever I could. He would say, "You need help." She said, "No, tadarabaya." She didn't need. I was going to help her to push up the thing, but she refused it. So fine, I'm not going to insist. But I'm saying like this. Excuse me again. I think my analogy with the case I gave you on Shabbos, you're perfectly fine. You like cleaning up the house. You're putting in the roast, and you're listening to some music on the radio. And all this is disturbed by this intruder. So you need help. So some tzaddik comes along and runs in and helps. And you know, the cops come. The guy's got, okay, fine. It's, you're going to thank. You're going to be the most thankful person. I'm going to say goodbye, and you're going to return to your work. I have to clean your house.
Trauma?
That's my reward now because I have to clean your house.
A lingering trauma.
A lot of times, if this should happen, when you feel you've been overcharged, whatever the case may be, okay, I'm going to go back and make a whole thing. Now, if you calculate it, it's going to cost you more to go, you're not going to win in the end because you have to schlep because of the gas and so on and so forth, and the amount may not be that big, but you feel you have to do it. You need to be vindicated and an apology. You need an apology. What do you need an apology? You got your money, let's take a hand of your money, throws it at you, then you're not satisfied. Because it doesn't satisfy the restoration of your dignity. See, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu understood, that there were two crimes committed. One was the practical, the fact that their water was stolen, but the other was the affront to their dignity.
But it happened every day.
He wanted, we don't know if it happened every day. I don't know that, but again, we're positing that. Let's just, if it happened every day, then why did they go at that point? Well, they didn't know that it was going to happen, I assume.
But they came home earlier that day.
Yeah, and they usually came home late.
So what? Well, Moshe Rabbeinu, obviously he did it. I don't know the timing.
The text supports this. The text, if they were early and Dad notices, gosh, you're early, girls.
Yes.
Why is today different?
Right.
Because normally they were held up by these shepherds. And they were later than they were today. So suddenly Dad notices they're early because today is different. Which means there's a pattern of the past of these guys ripping off the daughters.
Again.
They're used to it because they think, well, in this society.
Again, it wouldn't. When the girls come back, As far as their being earlier is concerned, I would attribute that to Moshe. Moshe was extremely capable, and maybe they normally had to wait. We don't know what went on every day. Maybe they normally had to wait. Maybe normally they wouldn't go there till the shepherds went and left, and then they went. And maybe this time there were no shepherds. We don't know the particularities. But then when the girls come back, they say, that's what they answered. Why are we early? Ish Mitzri, Yitzilonu, me are their own. There was, of course, this Egyptian guy. Of course, normally we would have to wait, and it would take longer. We'd always have to deal with these guys. But today it was, and it says, Vagam Dolo, and also. See, they presented the fact that he drew the water as a separate thing. Not only did he do it, but he also did that. Like, wow. You see? My question again is, why would he do it? I'm saying from that very sense of justice, which demanded that he intervene, it would not have been complete because then he wanted to do something which is just for you. I'm going to do you. I'm going to do something. Go out of my way to do something just for you. Why? Because that will restore you. That because you're important, because you have dignity. The shepherds who stole from you robbed your dignity. So if I just limited myself to driving them off, okay, so that's nothing personal. It's impersonal. I mean, we can't allow this in a society. So if a cop comes along and drives them away, that doesn't restore your sense of justice. That's just a universal thing. He doesn't care about you, but in a society, it can't work that way. But if he goes out of his way and does something for you, that means you have importance. So Moshe Rabbeinu's level of justice was on two levels. One was on the objective, a society can't be functioned like this, you can't have people, but also on the personal. So the fact that he watered the sheep was not just an emotion, was not anything, it was rather clearly stemmed from a deeper understanding of what the impact of an injustice is. That shows you a different dimension in the greatness of Moshe. But I want to ask another question. Because we're supposed to learn from this. And the question is, why did he do it? Why did he risk his life? Now, in the case, there's two differences between this and the case with the Jew. The case with the Jew, I understand. Because, first of all, it's a matter of life and death, I assume. I mean, that's the assumption we get, is that he was going to die. He had to save his life. So then you have no choice. Also, it's one-on-one. Now, apparently, Moshe was not a weak person. We understand that he was
How old was he at that point?
I'm sorry?
How old was he at that point?
At which
Whatever.
point? We don't know. He wasn't the kid.
Young man.
He was somewhere in his teen. This we don't know. This is probably, obviously he was older in this case, but he was very powerful. He was extremely powerful. But that I understand one-on-one. Okay, it's still a risk. But here, let me ask you a question. What was the terrible thing? Worst case, they're going to steal the water, and then they'd be home later, and they'd do it. Is that what you're going to? There's different kinds of injustice. Not only that, but there was another thing over here. It's a gang. It doesn't say how many. That's always dangerous, because one-on-one is one thing. A gang, somebody can get behind you, hit you in the back. I mean, it's a real totally dangerous thing. And for what? For what? Aren't there situations where you intervene? Are there other situations? Don't worry about it. Somebody cuts you off on the line. You're waiting on the, right? I don't know, super slow, whatever the case may be. And they cut you off. All right, or in the car, they cut you off. Now you have to wait for the light two more times, because the lights are very slow over here. So you're angry. That's a road rage. So you're angry, so you'll beep your horn. All right? You shouldn't do any gestures. Well, you may yell something, but you're going to get out of the car and start a fight, which you get. That's craziness. And you would tell your children, okay, all right, calm down. So whatever, what is the big deal? It's wrong, shouldn't happen. So you have beep a horn, but to take it to the next level, to make it a whole fight over what? Over what? Why would Moshe do that? If the way we're reading the story, nobody was going to die. You're saying that happened every day, pretty much. They pushed him around.
Moshe was an Ish Mitzri, or he looked like one.
So There's injustices. Sometimes kids are waiting in the playground. They're playing basketball. Mm-hmm. So then you wait your turn. You all right? And then you wait. Now your turn comes. If you guys come, they push you aside and they play. That's an injustice, but is it worth going to war for that kind? You can't.
Well, maybe.
You can't live that. Excuse me. You can't live that way in your private life. We make a distinction between the different levels of the injustice and the consequences. If every time there's an injustice, there's going to be a war, I mean, nobody can function. There are many times. Excuse me. Many times, people may insult you. They may do an injustice. As I said, in the supermarket, is that? Don't we have that virtue? Not to take everything to heart and overlook it and move on. You save your ammunition for a serious injustice that a certain injustice can't be tolerated. That's what's always. This to me, from the surface, does not appear to be of that nature.
Maybe that's the point.
Because
it isn't much.
I would agree with something that's been said, because you have to assume that Moshe knew what he was doing. In the case against the Egyptian, even so. I mean, the Egyptian, I assume, is a military background or whatever. He's an officer. So Moshe knew how to fight, apparently. And I would say that he had the skills that enabled him even to go up against more than one person. But that doesn't answer the question. It's still much more dangerous. But this, where the source or the precedent, we have a precedent that great tzaddikim were not passive individuals. Great tzaddikim were trained to fight because of the case by Abraham. When the Pilate came and told him that his nephew was captured. And this is against this was the mighty coalition of the four against the five. They were the most powerful coalition in the world. And he went after them with 318 men. Okay? And Vayishma Avram Kinishba Achiv, he heard that his brother was captured. Vayorek as Chanikov, he armed his Chanikov, his students, he trained them. Chinuch. Yelide Beso, those who had been born in his house, Shmona Asa Ushlosh Meir, 318, by Yirdo Fadan. All the tactics of the modern Israeli army, you get it from here. Night fighting, element of surprise, splitting up your forces, and creating a tremendous diversion. It's all in here. In one little pasuk, it tells you that Avraham Avinu was a military genius. It doesn't say so more openly because the Torah doesn't want to extol military values. That's a necessity. But you see that Avram, he wasn't a crazy person. He's going to take on the mightiest coalition. It was a brilliant commando raid, caught them by surprise. They were basically in a state where they thought they had won, so they were demobilized. They weren't ready for it, and he scored a tremendous victory.
All right.
So you see, you have to assume that Avram Avinu wasn't just sitting around. P- part of his curriculum included military training. And he pulled off a tremendous commando. This is before Aunt Debbie. He pulled off a tremendous commando raid. Now, I would say the same thing. This is true of all of our... Unfortunately, passivity has become, throughout the Golas. I mean, passivity in the face of all kinds of persecution and so forth. That's a separate question. Why the Jews always were passive? Why didn't they develop the means of self-defense? All right, but we'll put that aside for the time being. Now, okay, so I would say Moshe Rabbeinu didn't just go out there and he knew how to do this, but as I still say, it's always a danger because you have more than one guy. It's a gang. A gang is always dangerous because one guy could come from behind and give you a clap. Now, I would say as follows, without Rashi, I can't learn this, okay? This is what Rashi says. We know that Yisro was very, very unique. Yisro was originally a priest of idolatry. He was an idolatrous priest. Okay, and just give me a second.
It's called the Ish.
Ulechoin Midyan. Ulechoin Midyan. So Rashi says Rav Sheva. He was there teacher. Upire Shlomo Yavodas Alilim. He had separated himself from idolatry. Vinidu Meetzlam. And they put him into. What's the English word again?
Isolation.
Coventry.
Coventry. We went to Coventry. Right. That's an English.
Excommunication. Word. Excommunication. Excommunication. All right. So now that's it. Now we know this. This is not just a midrash. This is a fact because we know that Yisro subsequently came to Moshe and he was the first to praise God and then ultimately converted and so on. So that's okay. So what does it have to do with the story? They put him in he was excommunicated. So it says Vayigarshim, when the shepherds came, and they drove them away. Why did they drive them away?
Because they could.
Because the need was they were now persecuting them. You know, when people separate from your religion, when they separate from idolatry, and they turn to the true, so then they were afflicting them. That's why it wasn't for nothing. It's time they came along, that they were stronger. That if they were all one, they wouldn't have done this. If they were all
outcasts.
They were outcasts, and now they wanted to persecute them because they were outcasts. So that's why and Moshe apparently knew, you have to assume that Moshe knew this. So then Moshe saw, that's a different story. There's two types of an injustice. There's a technical injustice, it's an injustice. But it's not the worst thing in the world. Then what I call a philosophical injustice. This is an injustice which prevents me fulfilling my whole purpose. That's the purpose of the Jewish people, is to affirm the true idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that you have to fight for. When people are being persecuted because the Rambam says the whole purpose of the entire Torah is to the total elimination of idolatry, of Avodah Zarah, and that people should recognize that's the prayers on Rosh Hashanah. The world should be filled with the knowledge of God. So here are people that had the courage to separate themselves, and now these people are trying to break them down to try and bring them back into Avodah Zarah. That I have to fight for. That I have to fight for. That's not a mere injustice with water and this and that. That if it was just water and didn't make it, who cares? Who cares?
So
you'll get the
like,
water. But this will break. This will break them down. And because of this, because of this persecution, they're liable to give up Hashem and go back to Avodah Zarah. I'm a chuyev. I have an obligation, even to put my life on the line to save them. You see. So that's the. That, I believe, makes perfect sense, that he had the ability to do so, and he wasn't just fighting for a technicality, you should have been first. It's not all right, don't worry about it, that's not worth fighting for. But there are certain things that are worth fighting for. When it comes to people have the courage to give up Avodah Zarah and to embrace the proper idea, you see, that's why he agreed, he married his daughter to Moshe, he wanted Moshe to become his Rebbe. And then Rashi said before Moshe went to Mitzrayim, he had to take Rishus, he had to take permission, because he made a vow that he wouldn't leave him. So you see, it was all about, that's a Yeshua. That's a Yeshua, to be saved, not so that the water, to be saved from being drawn and seduced back into Avodah Zarah, because you can't take the pressure, that's a Yeshua. That's why it says, Vayoka Moshe Vayoshion, and he saved them.
Wow.
So that's the, that's... That's what Yisro recognized. This is not just an ordinary person. That's why he rebuked them. Lama says often as ish. Why can you abandon a man like this? You have to get close to a person like this. And that's what, so the question is, why did they, then he rebukes them? Because don't you even rebuke them with, this is a great person, this could be a great shidduch. He's got seven daughters. This can be a great shidduch. Sataka, why didn't the daughters? Because I think there's another sub. See, the daughters, I think, were too modest. It wasn't to go after a man. In other words, they were too. They weren't. I'm not going to tell you what happened to me on Shabbos.
Right.
No, I'm walking home. I'm serious. I'm walking home. I learned with the Rosenthals. I'm walking home. There's a kikar, right past the Nasi, and there's a kikar, and there's a woman, a nice-looking woman. So I say Shabbat. I say Shabbat Shalom. She says, Slicha, are you married?
Our David's walking with us daily.
I reacted instinctively. I said yes. Then she keeps going. I said, excuse me, why are you asking? she said, never mind. So anyways,
she was saying, have I got a daughter for you?
Maybe mostly, by asking the right kinds of questions.
Mm.
And again, I just tried to answer within the framework of what the pasuk is telling us without imposing.
Mm-hmm.
Without imposing. And I think this latter part, that he did it not because of a trivial, that difference between a technical injustice and a philosophical injustice, that's in the Torah, because we know what Yisro was.
Mm-hmm.
And we know he left his home, he went into the wilderness to study with Moshe, and so on and so forth. So you have to make a distinction. To step up, that's what the purpose of the Jewish people is. Avram Avinu, the whole world is on one side and Avram is on the other side. Mm-hmm. And those are the kinds of things that the Jewish people has to have the courage to stand up and proclaim the true idea of Hashem. And those are the things that we have to fight for.
Shkoach.